You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Well, wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this, talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Dungeon Cast. I'm Brian.
I'm your special guest, Jake.
This is the podcast where we talk about everything Dungeons & Dragons, from indignant imps to imperceivable imposters. Mm. And today we're talking about Ixxxachitals.
Ixxxachitals.
Prepare yourselves.
I cast Fireball.
That's a fun word.
Oh, yeah.
What is that?
Hey, Jake.
Hey, Brian.
People get really mad when we don't start the podcast with hey, or when Will doesn't say hey, Brian.
Yeah, yeah.
People talk about it.
Yeah.
So, yes. Yes, what is an Ixxxachitl?
Yeah.
And what does it do? Who is your daddy and what does he do?
Who does he work with?
Well, my special guest, the Ixxxachitl, I guess let's just jump right into it, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Ixxxachitls are aquatic-based creatures. Mm-hmm. They resemble manta rays, but have small claws at the end of their wings or pectoral fins.
Mm-hmm.
The anatomy is based off of a manta ray for sure,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know where it breaks down and starts to become like a D&D monster. The claws definitely.
Claws definitely.
See, that suggests some bone structure up there.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I was looking at manta ray anatomy and,
it's like
and
cartilage.
It's cartilage.
Yeah,
it's cartilage
like
up in there. Yeah, these and I'm pretty sure I wrote that.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
these
yeah.
wing-like fins are made of cartilage
oh,
in the
hey.
Real world, but being clawed suggests these carry some type of bone structure. Hey, I just said the thing I just
you
wrote.
Did. Look
yeah.
at you.
They have black intelligent eyes. They are mistaken for a typical mana, which these creatures would likely count on to maintain an element of surprise when striking out against a foe, because they are evil.
Yes.
They are generally quite evil. So, these creatures are, evil and cunning,
yeah.
and are commonly referred to as demon rays.
Ooh.
And I thought that was really fitting for, like, their D&D nature and, like, being named a demon. They're, like, somewhat associated with demons.
Oh, yeah.
Or very much so, I would say. But, yeah, they look a lot like the mantas. And they're commonly referred to in the real world as devil fish.
Mm.
I think that's because they have the little...
like little horn things?
Yeah, I wrote down what the... let me keep reading. Mantas were given this nickname for their cephalic lobes.
Mm.
Cephalic lobes.
Mm-hmm.
The dual apparatus located at the forefront. So they look like horns up there, but they're
for
feeding, I'm pretty sure.
They are.
So yeah, the mantas were given this nickname for their cephalic lobes. Yes. The Ixxxachitls sport these as well. However, they appear to be much sharper. They're like horns.
Ooh.
They look like they're really good for stabbing.
I was about to say.
This is kind of consistent with most editions going back, with the exception of first edition. They have like a more,
like
no
a
horns up there,
head.
Just rounded, kind of tapered look.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit cartoony. You know, first edition drawings are like these black and white, like profile sketches a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And we can look that up in a little while, probably on the break. We're going to be looking at them a lot.
Ooh, okay.
So, these ones have like the horns up there.
Mm-hmm.
First edition, rounded. I like second edition a lot too, because it looks like a cartoon, like a bandit almost. Like it should be, like it's drawn almost like it's wearing a ski mask. Like it's going to rob a bank. It's got like a cheeky grin on its face.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So let's see here. Most of them are also portrayed with long barbed tails. There's also an exception there with second edition. It just looks like a long, smooth sort of tail.
Mm.
Yeah, they have like these long, like flowing, like tails that end in like barbs. where they have barbs like all along it.
Also fit for stabbing?
I imagine. Yes, they are. We'll get into what they can do later on. Okay, but okay, yeah, definitely for stabbing.
Yeah.
One of their things for... well, you've seen a picture, but we'll get into that.
Yeah.
So 5th edition shows a more triangular structure to the body with this monster, with like these tapered wings that sort of reminded me of a butterfly when I was looking at them.
Mm.
And they pull inward towards its tail, so they make that V shape.
Mm-hmm.
So veering from the look of a traditional manta ray, this monstrous depiction shows a shark-like face between its two lobes or horns, including the shape of its nose and mouth. So... whenever I look at it, it kind of looks like this shark face is sort of emerging from the creature.
Yeah.
Like the skin is kind of flayed there and it's like peeling back. There's nothing that mentions like why that is. I think and their mouth has like rows of teeth, like a shark.
Yeah.
You know, so there's like a shark like feature there, but that's it.
Probably just a fit in with that demon vibe, man. Like, give it a scary face.
Yeah. Like. I mean, like, we have lots of creatures in D&D with, like, rows of sharp teeth.
Yeah.
You know, that's, like, a scary thing. I'm sure they just wanted to slap that thing on there. But we'll get into it a little more. I already said this, but I wrote, like, I really like the cartoon henchman vibe of the second edition one.
Mm.
Like, it should be carrying a bag of money or something. it reminded me of Man Ray from SpongeBob.
Oh, man.
It's a lot like that.
Yeah, yeah. That's hilarious.
I don't know who knows about Man Ray, but you should. So the Ixazachital, they hatch from eggs and are no... Is that normal with manta rays? I didn't look that up.
You know, I'm not sure. Like, sharks usually give birth, like, to live young.
Right. And we've talked about on the show that... Some sharks kill each other in the womb for power.
They do. They eat the weaker ones.
Yeah.
But some sharks do lay eggs, so I don't know. I don't know where the comparison between sharks and manta rays and D&D filters. And different.
I should have looked. I looked up so much other anatomy stuff. Yeah. I did not look up the birth of manta rays because, you know, it's so inspired from that.
You know, thinking back on it, I don't know if I've ever seen, like, a baby manta ray.
I'm sure they're just like small manta rays.
I'm sure, yes, yeah, yeah. That's usually what a baby looks like.
I don't think there's like a toad sort of evolution from, what do they call them?
Like a tadpole.
Tadpole, that's what it is.
I feel
Jeez.
You.
So these are born, when they're born, they're no larger than the size of a human hand. Huh. So, you know, that's kind of cool. Like a little, like a sand dollar picture, like a big one.
Yeah.
The life of these creatures is extremely difficult and rife with struggle, and we'll get into why, because you'll see like what kind of environment they're going to grow up in. Obviously, we mentioned they're aquatic, but the ocean, just the regular ocean, is a crazy place to live. We'll get into where specifically these live, although they can just live in the ocean, I'm sure. They do everything in their power to survive. Those that make it to adulthood are shaped by the battles of their youth. They learn the secrets of survival in their unforgiving environments, granting them regenerative abilities from feeding on the life force of other creatures. So they are vampiric.
Interesting.
So the stat blocks in, and the stat blocks for these are in Out of the Abyss, Rage of Demons. Mm. And spoilers for that campaign setting, but like a group of adventurers is going to fight demons, a lot of demons.
Yeah.
And like, is that even spoilers? Demogorgon's on the fucking front of the book.
Yeah, yeah. That feels like a, if you put Abyss in there, it feels like a calling card almost.
Yeah.
Like, you know what you're getting.
I feel like you should probably know you're going to be dealing with that shit. So
100%.
That's where you'll find these stat blocks. So there's actually a regular Ixazachital stat block, and we'll go over them in depth later. That does not have like a vampiric ability set onto it. And then there's a like buffed up one, like a vampiric Ixazachital
that has
a regenerative ability to it.
How cool.
I'll get a little bit more into detail with that later as well.
Yeah.
So these, let's talk about like how they live. Not quite yet where specifically. Ixazachitals prefer to hollow out natural aquatic formations like coral reefs. But other aquatic structures as well. Mm. They make labyrinth dens up in there. Kind of reminded me of the Beholder. They carve out like a labyrinth maze of their shit to make people lost and to like
and
get the drop on them and stuff.
Yeah.
I didn't really see like I don't know why they're making a labyrinth. specifically, I mean, why would one make a labyrinth? Because you want to fuck up anybody trying to fuck you up, right? Yeah. You know how it works and they don't.
Yeah.
So I think it's just a natural, like, defensive thing. They do not do this alone. They are known for enslaving other aquatic species to force them into creating these complex structures.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. Once the life and nutrients of an area are stripped bare, they move on to greener pastures, so to speak, and repeat the process. Vast networks they carved out are abandoned. So if you find like a coral reef, I don't know if you, like, there are lots of scenarios where you can be underwater in D&D. Mm-hmm. One of them is you're playing an aquatic race and your whole group is. So you have an underwater campaign, which is a totally viable, really fucking cool thing I've been wanting to do.
Yeah,
you've got the Triton, you've got Merfolk, Water Genasi. I mean, like, potions of water breathing give you, like, a spell of water breathing, help you for, you know, long stretches of time.
Maybe Air Genasi, since you don't necessarily need
air.
Air
Genasi,
right?
Can, like, live underwater, technically, yeah.
How, like, interesting.
You don't need to breathe.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, you could play an underwater campaign. That's like a feasible thing you
can
do.
That's dope.
It would be fun to play the non, like, water aquatic species and have to, like, figure out how to do your shit underwater.
Because that fucks up with everything. Like, disadvantage on attacks, like, it affects literally
everything gets fucked up, man. Yeah. Like, your weapons will degrade and corrode underwater you don't have, like, the correct shit.
Yeah, yeah.
So I imagine, like, when I picture Tritons and stuff, I picture them with, like, you know, more natural underwater style weapons.
Yeah, kind of like Aquaman. Like, they had Tritons made out of, like, coral and stuff.
Yeah, metals that aren't going to rust underwater or degrade underwater. Yeah. I don't know specifically what those things are, but it would be fun to figure it out.
Yeah, yeah, hell yeah.
And to come upon one of these structures would be roll, you know,
that'd be
roll
a dope
nature
dungeon.
Check.
Yeah.
It's an exotachital
den. Know, like, that would be so sick, yeah.
They're not here anymore, obviously. The nutrients in the area, I think, is what they're with. And I don't think that just means, like, you know, coral is a living thing and, like, polyps and stuff. You're not just getting the nutrients from there, but the living things that were occupying that space.
Yeah.
With this vampiric quality, I'm sure that they could, like, lock creatures in with them and, like,
just feed
farm
them
essentially for power. So traveling in schools, they will eradicate opposing creatures for their territory if they deem the area worthy of becoming their new feeding ground. I imagine them rolling up on, like, whatever ocean fools they see, like, yo, nice reef. It's ours now. Scram. I also devoured your offspring on the way in. You should really keep a better eye on your shit. And no worries. We'll keep an eye on it for you from now on.
That fits in with, like, the cartoony, like, bandit kind of thing.
Just, I know,
like,
right?
A gang of them rolling up, and you're just like, this is ours now. Get out of here.
Yeah, Batman's about to show up and beat the shit
out of
them.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
And then they go to war. That's basically what it is. They roll up and they roll up in a school and they roll up with their slaves.
Yeah.
And their slaves are probably powerful. There's a lot of cool shit that lives in the ocean.
Yeah.
And they don't just have slaves. I think they maintain other powerful company as well.
Mm.
And we'll get into that in a little bit here. So in tandem with their generally evil demeanor, many exoxatidals tend to worship demons.
Mm.
So that's a thing. Yeah. Particularly the all-powerful patron demon prince of this podcast, Demogorgon.
Shout out to Demogorgon.
They consider Demogorgon to be their patron and creator, much like we do here on the show. Mm. They compete against creatures known as Marrow, which we've covered in a previous episode.
Mm-hmm,
Those are really, really interesting creatures as well. I definitely recommend you guys check that episode out.
Mm-hmm.
They've been covered. So they rival with those creatures as to who is the greatest and most favorite servant of the Prince of Demons.
Ooh.
So they're kind of like,
they're competing.
They
with
probably
them.
Don't roll with them.
Yeah.
So they probably like, fuck you guys, we're the best.
Yeah.
And vice versa.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what that kind of conflict looks like. I don't think they probably like seek conflict, but maybe they do. Maybe they roll up and the Marrow are like are subjugating something that the exoxatidals want.
Yeah.
And they're like, why should you be in charge of this resource? We are the glorious like spawn of Demogorgon.
Yeah.
Like, let us take this over, and then they can get a fight like that.
Maybe it's like a... like an on-site kind of thing with crows and owls.
Oh, shit, yeah.
Like, they just instinctually, like species in their DNA are like, they see an owl and they're like, I gotta fuck that thing up.
Exactly.
Like, just because they hate each other.
A crow that's never seen an owl before will attack
an owl.
An owl.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's, I think that's why they call them a murder of crows, right? Because they roll up on owls and, like, three or more and whoop ass.
That makes sense.
Because they... they roll up and murder fools. Yes, they do.
They roll deep.
Owl's the same. Yeah, that's a really strange one. And that was going around on TikTok. That's why a lot of us in our workplace know about it now.
Yeah, it's an interesting animal fact that might apply to this. Maybe they have like a genetic imperative in all of them to be like, hey, fuck that thing.
It could totally be that. Yeah. For any new listeners or anyone requiring a refresher, Demogorgon is one of, if not the most powerful, in my opinion, the most powerful, of the demon lords who preside over the infinite layers of the plane known as the Abyss. Demogorgon is known to preside over the 88th layer, otherwise known as the Gaping Maw. And this briny oceanic expanse is home to many terrible creatures that are worshippers of Demogorgon, including but not limited to Krakens, Abyliss, and of course, the subject of this episode, the Sagittal. Mm-hmm. There are likely a multitude of other aquatic abominations as well that do this. But others might be too many to name or haven't been named, you know. Mm-hmm. Something of note is the homie Dagon. Mm-hmm. The homie Dagon. He's a... Mm-hmm. Do you know about Dagon? What do you know about Dagon?
I know the name.
Yeah, Dagon's from, like, Lovecraftian lore.
Yeah.
Like the elder god Dagon. But in D&D 5e, mm-hmm. he's a demon lord of the Abyss.
How dope.
But he has those kind of things. Dagon is the homie to Demogorgon because Dagon will counsel Demogorgon individually, because Demogorgon's technically one entity, but exists mm-hmm. as like two entities living as one entity.
Yeah.
Dagon will like counsel each head separately in like a psychic way.
How they're interesting.
Like best buddy next door neighbors, pretty much. Their That's layers cool. actually connect through the ocean. So like the further down the Gaping Maw you go, you'll eventually get to the 88th layer or the 89th layer, which is Dagon's home. So that's just the thing. Let me see. Where is... Dang, Will, you're good at, like, picking back up on the notes when I interrupt you. I can't even do it myself. It's Demogorgon's next-door neighbor. So the Ixxxtlal are known to make their home there as well. So they're not just, like, in the Gaping Maw. Mm. They're not just in Dagon's house. But I picture them also, like, probably in the regular ocean of D&D, which are vast and full of terrible monsters, like the Kraken and the Aboleth, mm-hmm. Who are also into enslavement. So a little bit more about Demogorgon to help give a background. Since they do think that this is like their patron creator, mm-hmm. there's like when you worship in D&D, you usually get something back in terms of power. So let's get to understand a little bit more about Demogorgon in case people don't know. Demogorgon is roughly 18 feet tall, which is 2.5 doors, as I've detailed on other episodes.
What a door strange is a great measurement. Frame of
reference for height.
That's true.
Like a 6-foot person can easily walk through a door. It's a little taller than that.
That's fair.
He's got a long forked tail, bulky arms ending in forked tentacles as well. Clawed dino feet. He's got like a reptilian base or like a tyrannic. Was it tyrannic a word? Like a right
draconic?
Word? Draconic? Draconic. Like it's like a dinosaur.
Yeah, yeah.
Saurian.
Yeah.
From like the waist down. He's got two heads, each bearing resemblance to a mandrill, which is like a kind of like looks like a baboon, even mm-hmm. though they're not monkeys. They're apparently they're in their own genus, which I found out the last time I covered Demogorgon.
Interesting.
These heads each have their own brain and personality that tend to war with each other, as well as secretly attempt to overthrow one another. So both heads are insane. Amayul is the schemer, so you'll deal with the machinations of the demon prince before you encounter him, and that head will have been responsible probably for those things. Like,
he's the one scheming.
Let's have the butterfly flap its wings in China so that this, and this happen. Kind of how devils and demons work. They'll be like, if I have one of my cult followers put this demonic book in this library, a person will come and read it and a chain of events will ensue.
How dope.
Like, and then I will breach forth. Yes. I will be born into the material realm.
How dope.
Which is very troublesome.
Yes.
So, that's insane. Yeah. Okay. So Hethrodiah is, the more physical, barbaric sort of embodiment. They rely on massive destructive power that the body of Demogorgon wields. There are many worshippers in existence that make up the cult of Demogorgon. This includes the Ixxxtlal and the longtime listeners of the show. So Demogorgon's mission is to oversee the undoing of the order of the multiverse. His chaotic evil nature pervades over every action he takes. These major embodiments, like demon lords in the realms and stuff, have been covered extensively on previous episodes of the show, but it's pertinent that we continue to understand and refresh people about Demogorgon.
Yeah, of course.
So we're not going to get too much more into it beyond that. I mean, there's some cool abilities. Like Demogorgon can like incite madness. That's like one of Amael's powers, just by looking at somebody. And like being around a demon lord, like you can like become insane. And there are like a cool madness chart you can roll on.
I was going to say that's definitely some like Lovecraftian kind of, it harkens back to our like Halloween episode live play that we did where we had to like roll for insanity and stuff like that. Like it's harkening back to that.
We have the Dredge into Shadowmire Keep, which is like a 4-part, like
I think it was
4 to 6 hour, like actual play Halloween special. And you can find that on our Patreon.
Very dope.
It was very cool. Will did a great job with that. And we play monster races.
Yeah. Evil campaign.
It was an evil campaign where we have to like band together. I think I was a bullywug.
You were.
You were a...
I was a goblin.
You were the goblin that rode a goblin.
Rode a hobgoblin.
A hobgoblin.
Lobotomized hobgoblin. Yes.
That was great. Freeland was a kobold.
Yeah.
Friend of the show, Josh Freeland, if you guys aren't familiar, check out Super Quest Saga, our sci-fi game. And then we had a fourth.
His friend, Freeland's friend.
Oh, Mikey.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was the orc, right?
Yes.
That was funny.
That was a good time.
It was really funny.
It was his first time playing. It was a very fun first experience, I think.
He was great.
yeah.
What's that guy? Okay, so let's get back to this.
Yes.
So a quick recap of demons. Mm-hmm. So we just talked a lot about a demon lord, but just let me like tell you like a quick recap on demons straight from the monster manual.
Hit me with
demons are the embodiment of chaos and evil, engines of destruction barely contained in monstrous form, possessing no compassion, empathy, or mercy that exist. They exist only to destroy. That's important to know because knowing the motivation of demons and knowing about Demogorgon is knowing the motivations of most of their servants, including the Ixxxachitl. So by getting into these mentalities, we can kind of understand, even though that the Ixxxachitl is not necessarily a demon, it's like an aberration. I could consider it a demon, I think.
Demon adjacent.
Yeah, like it's right. If it's not there, it's right there.
Yeah.
So that being said, most humanoid worshippers from the material plane likely do not know the extent of who or what they worship in the case of demons and devils. You're usually kind of tricked into it, or you are strung along with promises to fulfill your own goals of power, proving ultimately you are a means to an end. Or you're just already insane and you're like cool with some of the stuff that's going on, or all of the stuff that's going on.
Yeah.
You know, like it's easy to like kind of hook somebody that's already a little loose up there.
Yeah.
So while that's likely the case with most creatures, the Ixxxachitl's relationship with the demon prince is likely far more symbiotic in nature. All who worship Demogorgon succumb to madness eventually, which is something of note.
Yeah.
So one thing that's cool about this lore with the Ixxxachitl is that they are able to siphon energy from their foes, right? Like they can latch on, and we'll get more into what exactly that is, but they can... like steal energy from creatures. There is some suggestion that this energy can be sent elsewhere. So a lot of these Ixxxachitls power Demogorgon.
Yeah.
They send this energy through like whatever channel to power up their demon prince.
How sick.
So it's a big deal to like run. If you're in the Maw, like trying to assault the gaping Maw, which is a horrible idea. Yes. Typically.
Sounds like it.
But the only way to kill a demon lord is to go to it, or like a major deity or deity-esque like figure, you have to go to their plane of existence and kill them there.
Yeah.
If you kill a demon lord in the material plane, it will respawn in its home plane.
Right. Yeah.
So, and so this is spoilers for Out of the Abyss, Rage of Demons for sure, because at the end of that, and you can skip ahead like another minute if you want, at the end of that module, your party come up on the demon lords. You're in the Underdark. And Demogorgon fucks them all up.
Oh, fuck.
They fight it out. Demogorgon wins. He kills Orcus, which is the rival of the demon lords, like of all time, pretty much. And Orcus is the demon lord of undeath.
And he kills him? How ironic.
He takes Orcus up and wraps him up and crushes his throat.
Ooh,
read that part.
Dope.
And Orcus has like the ruby rod and stuff. Like that's just laying on the ground. Someone can pick it up. Yeah. Demogorgon was going to want to pick it up, according to the book. So Orcus turns to soup or whatever, but is reborn on his own plane. Like you don't just kill Orcus. Yeah. Like you have to go to their plane. When you go to a demon lord's plane, it's like a lot of shit tips in their favor.
Yeah.
I think more people are probably familiar with dragons.
Yeah, it's probably like a legendary, like a lair kind
of
thing.
Exactly. Like the way a dragon lair works is the way a lair of a lot of these creatures works, where the lair is going to work against you. There's going to be regional effects, magical shit going on. You will be subject to madness in the maw that you will roll on. You will have like these kind of things. Like you might feel more hethradia, like bestial and like rage. You might feel like paranoia or whatever. Like you'll roll on a table, you'll succumb to madness, and it's up to you to roleplay that.
How cool.
Yeah, so that's it's a cool module. I was thinking about like getting into it because they talk about the drow are involved and Menzo Berenzin, which is like an Aria Salvatore sort of thing, like they're the home of the drow and all the shit. Like I was like, oh, there's some really cool stuff in this book that like I've overlooked. So we pulled up the Forgotten Realms wiki, which like has a cool feature where you can kind of tab through the images of like each edition of the creature. So we can like look and talk about it in real time. So yeah, that first one, side profile, barbed tail, sharp teeth, no lobes up top.
No lobes.
But it does have the claws on the ends of the pectoral fins or
that's
wings.
That's true. And some spots.
I imagine that, yeah, it does. Maybe. Some flavor.
I thought it was like a tentacle kind of thing, but that's probably not. It's probably spots.
I think it's just the curvature and then it's spots. Yeah. So I think these claws are there to hold on, obviously, definitely, so that it can do its vampiric shit or like stab better or bite better. So the 2E one, we're looking at it. It does look like a bad guy from an old cartoon, like a Batman cartoon.
It almost looks like that, or it looks like it almost looks like a Pokemon, like a gold or a red, like concept art of a Pokemon.
Like a dark type that has like an evil smile or whatever.
Yeah,
it definitely has like this conniving look on its face, 100%. Right? The 3E one's really interesting. It has a lot of the same features, but they're kind of like this one's in in vibrant color.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. It does have a shark mouth, though, like inside, like the rows of teeth.
It does.
See, it's trying to like swap some fish.
And it looks more like natural, too. Like it looks like more based in like nature. Almost.
Yes.
Like this looks like if you were flipping through like an old book looking at dinosaurs or something. And it's like, oh, yeah, like this was in the fucking Precambrian Sea and shit. Like that's what it looks like.
I totally agree with that. So the 4E one, it looks really similar to the 5E one, if not identical. I really should have looked up the specific 4E lore. Will's really good about looking that up. And it's always, 4th edition is like so vastly different. They tried to break the mold with a lot of things. And so there's probably some really epic like niche lore that comes with it. Likely. I'm not going to look it up now. We are where we are. Just know that 4E probably has some dope shit going on or some shit that you hate. Like you either love 4E or you don't. The cool thing about the game is that you can accept that lore or reject it. There's five fucking choices for you. Or you don't have to like it.
Make up your own.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, folks. I'm here today to tell you about Visible. Something unfortunate about wireless services, what you see isn't always what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. No perception check required. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. If you're looking for a carrier that is upfront with no hidden fees, then go to Visible.com to make the switch. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save, and you're going to be getting unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Visible is the wireless carrier that's constantly operating from a zone of truth. In their quest for total transparency, Visible wants you to know monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify is great. They're taking businesses of all sizes, cradling them in their arms to help them grow by giving them the tools they need. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success at every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/dungeoncast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/dungeoncast now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/dungeoncast.
So let's get into the stat block. Mm-hmm. Usually I'll give Will a break and like just read them.
Mm-hmm.
But you're my special guest, so I'm just going to read them anyway.
I appreciate it.
So we have the Ixen Satchel, which is a small aberration of chaotic evil. Its armor class is 15 natural. It's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Its HP is 18. So like I said, these are the small ones.
Yeah.
It's got zero walking speed. It can only swim 30 feet.
Mm.
So we got a 12 in strength, a 16 in dex, a 13 in con, a 12 in intelligence, a 13 in wisdom, and a 7 in charisma. So all these stats are pretty good, especially the dex. The only dump stat is charisma. It's a minus two.
Yeah.
So it's pretty smart. It's pretty wise. It's extremely dexterous, and it has some strength. So if the latching, the claw thing, I think that's for reals. It's got a dark vision of 60 feet, passive perception of 11. It can speak. It can speak Abyssal and Ixxachitl. So they have their own language.
They have their own language. How cool.
Yes. And Abyssal is like the language of demons.
Yeah.
So whatever the fuck that sounds like. These are quarter challenge rating for 50 XP. Now, the actions. You're going to do a bite, melee weapon attack with +3 to hit, a reach of 5 feet on one target. It's going to do 4 or 1d6 plus 1 piercing damage. No, nothing else on that.
Mm.
A lot of bites have like a poison thing or something else.
Yeah.
As a reaction, it has a barbed tail.
Mm.
When a creature provokes an opportunity attack from the Ixxachitl, the Ixxachitl can make the following attack instead of using its bite. Melee weapon attack +5 to hit, reach of 5 feet, one target. It's going to do 7 or 1d8 plus 3 piercing damage. So if you try to get away without disengaging, it's going to get that tail up into your grill.
Yeah, yeah.
So say, ooh, an opening. 1,000 years of death. Put it right in your butt. Okay, so next we have the vampiric Ixxachitl.
Mm.
This is a medium aberration. So I think a lot of the time in D&D, things scale in power with age, especially dragons.
True, yeah.
I think this is one of those creatures, and like it says in the lore, the older they get, like the more they benefit from their experience.
Yeah, definitely.
So they live in this harsh world of demons, basically. They live in the gaping maw. Can you imagine what goes on in a demon's realm and like what you'd have to go through to like be victorious? So I like the art here. It kind of looks war-beaten in this picture.
Does.
It's
yeah.
got like what looks like it could be wounds.
Mm-hmm.
Or perhaps it's the blood of its last meal. I'm not really sure, but it
or
does.
Or gills, maybe?
It does look like, yeah, like gills. Yeah, it does have gills.
Yeah.
But yeah, it looks a little beaten on the wings. Like
it does, yeah.
Kind of some tapering there isn't as symmetrical as like something that hasn't gone through some shit.
Hell yeah.
And then like this flayed skin where this like shark, it just looks like a shark is like coming out of there.
It does.
But yeah. I mean, it's a crazy looking shark mouth. But yeah, this is a creature I imagine that is like war tested.
Yeah.
So this has a 16 natural armor, so one more, and a substantially higher 44 HP. Its speed is also 0. Swim speed is 30. The strength is a 14. Dex 18.
Ooh.
Con 13. Intelligence 12. Wisdom 13. Charisma 7. So no boost. It's never going to get more charismatic.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to be, and I'm going to tell you why in this stat block and the next one. It's got 60 feet of dark vision, passive perception 11, Abyssal, and Ixxachitl for languages. This is a challenge rating 2 creature with 450 XP. I'm sure if a school of these is rolling up, like...
That'd be scary.
This is a scary mob.
Yeah, yeah.
If it's got these mixed in with the little ones, like, that could be a very scary mob already. And we'll get into it a little more. This one has the regenerative property. So the Ixxachitl gains 10 HP at the start of its turn.
Oh, damn.
The Ixxachitl dies only if it starts its turn with 0 HP, which I think is consistent with most creatures that have 0. Or no, like, I'm thinking about the troll. Like,
troll can get back up, I think. Yeah.
But if you knock it down to 0, it doesn't die until the start of its next turn. So if somehow it gets a heal before then, it'll get back up, I guess, is what that means.
Like if it regenerates in the meantime, basically? Because the regen happens at the start of its turn?
At the start of its turn. There's a little bit... It's a little bit weird with the wording there. So at the start of its turn, it regenerates 10 HP. But if it starts the turn with 0 HP, it's dead. So if it has 0 HP... it dies and does not regen 10 is what I understand by reading that.
Yeah, yeah.
And that mechanically then it would just sound.
It would just constantly be regenerating.
Yeah, like how would you, you'd have to like
kill it.
Hit it 44 negative and then it would die.
Yeah.
Like how like people die in D&D sometimes. I've never seen that, but you know.
Yeah, I don't know.
We have the Vampiric Bite for actions. Melee weapon attack with +4 to hit, reach of 5 feet on one target. It's going to do 6 or 1d8 +2 piercing damage. The target must succeed on a DC 11 constitution saving throw, or its hit point maximum is reduced by an amount equal to the damage taken. And the Ixie Satchel regains hit points equal to that amount. The reduction lasts until the target finishes a long rest. The target dies if its hit point maximum is reduced to 0. That sucks.
Yeah, yeah.
It also has the reaction for Barb Tail. When a creature provokes an opportunity attack from the Ixie Satchel can make the following attack instead of using its bite. Melee weapon attack, +6 to hit, reach of 10 feet, one target. It's going to do 9 or 1d10 +4 piercing damage. I kind of like the idea of homebrewing more vampiric shit onto that barb on this version.
That'd be dope.
Yeah, just to really kind of emphasize it. So here's the part where I was saying like the Ixie Satchel could siphon energy from its prey and send it somewhere else rather than itself. So these max hit points that it's draining from its opponent, like where do they go?
Yeah, and if, it doesn't go onto that thing, right?
Well, does it? Constitution saving throw, hit point max is reduced by the damage taken. The Ixie Satchel regains hit points equal to that amount. So it does, it could take it, but what a cool thing you could do for homebrew is to keep track of that and add them to Demogorgon's hit points.
That'd be dope.
So if they are going to fight Demogorgon in your stretch here and they encounter these things, you could just be like, yeah, it's Demogorgon. You don't know what he normally looks like, but he looks extra fucking strong. Mm. And you don't exactly know why whatever, but like he'll have an extra 30 HP or whatever that he shouldn't have, and it's because they took it from you.
Yeah. I was thinking like maybe even homebrew a... homebrew like a grapple with the tail.
Oh yeah.
And then have like the bite have like advantage on the next run or something like that. Like, hey, you're now restrained, and then like make this thing a little bit harder, maybe, if you're seeing them destroy it fast or something like that.
I kind of like that, because if you're trying to run away and it's punishing you for trying to run away. Yeah.
Like make it even more
extra so.
Yeah.
So there is a I like these homebrew ideas and the variations there. There is a variant in here.
Ooh.
The word variant is so popping right now.
It is because of Loki.
Because of Loki, which I'm loving.
It's so good.
So the variant is Ixie Satchel Cleric.
Oh.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that.
Very cool. Because,
like, I'd expect a warlock, right?
Yes.
Or something else, but, like...
But it seems like they, like, deify Demogorgon, so Cleric fits.
He's technically, like, I think, a lesser demon. Is he considered a lesser demon? Or a lesser god is what I meant to say.
But
he's the biggest demon, the demon lord, or one of them.
Mm-hmm.
But some Ixie Satchel and Vampiric Ixie Satchel, fuck man, I did so good
it's a tough one.
Right there, are able to cast divine spells.
Ooh.
Such a creature gains the following features: spell casting. So you can give this thing spells to cast, which I really, really like.
That's very cool.
The oldest and wisest and most loyal to the demon prince kind of thing. So the Ixie Satchel is a 5th level spellcaster that uses wisdom as its spellcasting ability, which is decent. It's +1. The spell save DC is 11 with a +3 to hit on spells. The Ixie Satchel has the following cleric spells prepared, which I've looked up all these. They're fucking cool. They're all cleric spells except for one. So the cantrips, so at will stuff, is Guidance and Thaumaturgy.
Sick.
And we can talk about flavor for these.
Yeah.
But the first level spells got 4 slots. That first one's going to be Charm Person. So that's the only non-cleric spell.
Mm-hmm.
That is a warlock spell and you know, other lists, obviously, it falls into. But that's particularly the standout. You know, it kind of goes with that vampiric thing, too.
Definitely.
Or which demonic. I really like.
Yeah.
And it can also do Create or Destroy Water, which I kind of like.
Interesting.
So it could feasibly, like,
go on to land or
go on something. to land in some fashion. It doesn't have a walking speed, but it could make enough water for it to like, I think it's like a ton of gallons. Like a bunch of, it can make a lot of water, enough to submerge it. And if it like wants to talk some to somebody on the surface, it like could do that itself in a way.
That's fucked up. Like, can you imagine just like it, like jumping from puddle to puddle that it makes.
Right.
It's like, hey, my home guy, like, let's, how about we talk about Demogorgon right now?
This thing is,
you want to know about, right? about our Lord and Savior Demogorgon?
It's like knocking on your door. Yeah, it's like, why is the front porch so wet?
Yeah. And you just look down and just a freaking manta ray in a fucking like 5 foot puddle.
he tries to give you a pamphlet about Demogorgon and you try to close the door. It fucking barbs you with an opportunity attack. No, you will speak to me. Yes.
And it drags you away.
Yeah, they are not charismatic, so that's probably how that would go.
Yeah.
It has hold person, so it could just hold you there and make you hear the word of Demogorgon.
That's true.
It has a silent spell, ooh, which I was like, immediately my brain just starts racing scenarios.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
you're in your underwater campaign. Bubble sounds everywhere.
Yeah.
No sounds. Oof. Wait, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. A swarm of Ixitzatchitals.
That's like, dope.
Rolling up silently on you.
That also fucks up like your spellcasting too, because if you have verbal components or something like that, you now can't cast because it did silence on you.
That's right. Silence is a cool defensive spell in that way.
That's very sick.
A lot of people use the darkness, say to use a darkness spell that way.
Yeah.
Like if you can't see, if somebody's invisible,
you can't
just cast
them.
Darkness.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the third level slots, that was second level. You get three of those.
Mm-hmm.
Third level, you're going to get two of those slots, dispel magic and tongues.
Ooh.
So this thing can. And will talk to you.
Yeah. It's like, oh,
will
do you not know
the word of Demogorgon?
I got something for you, my man.
Yeah. So what do you think? What do you think of these spells? Like, how would you flavor the guidance and thaumaturgy?
That's cool. I mean,
because this is an underwater thaumaturgy. Like,
yeah.
Thaumaturgy kind of just like its description is like, I think, defaulted to like land.
Yeah.
Like, you know, over air.
I mean, underwater, like maybe you
make
could
booms and quakes and stuff.
Yeah, you can make the water around you like boil or
that's
something.
Cool.
Have like bubbles go up and like have it kind of flavor the. Could you imagine like a curtain of bubbles happen and then you just like see an Ixitzatchital just like pop out of it like, hello, I'm here to talk to you about fucking demon. I'm making it sound real goofy like a fucking Wizard of Oz villain, but it's more like, you know, you can make it be scary or make it goofy.
No, yeah, that's the thing. I like the idea of thaumaturgy and spells like thaumaturgy, you know, like prestidigitation, I guess, being more than like, it almost kind of robs like having to use a whole action to cast it.
Yeah.
I feel like it should kind of be like a latent thing that just happens.
Like more like passive.
When a creature shows up and like if a devil showed up and like fire and brimstone were like popping up from its legs and shit.
That'd be dope.
Like it could really only do that with a spell like thaumaturgy.
Mm-hmm.
But like you would have to like consciously do that. I like the idea of thaumaturgy just kind of unconsciously happening.
Yeah.
And making things happen like the effect of this creature being in the room is magical, and like this is the aura it puts out.
Very cool.
Yeah, like it could make like blood in the water and shit.
Like I'm thinking of it kind of, maybe it's not the right imagery, but like I'm thinking of it kind of like when somebody goes Super Saiyan in Dragon Ball Z, like the ground starts pulsing, like the stones start rising, like that kind of thing.
Exactly.
Like especially if this thing was gonna be like delivering a sermon to Demogorgon, like that seems like it would be dope shit to make it bleed in the water or have bubbles happen or something like that. You know what I mean?
You can make your eyes glow.
Yes.
You can make your mouth glow, I guess. I don't know why I said that.
Or like your voice boom, like that kind of thing. Like
yeah.
Have it like be shockwaves through the water. Oh, like that could be
like
dope.
Like Aquaman. Like,
yes. Yeah. Yeah. That, I think that would be sick.
How would an evil Aquaman sound?
Yes. Definitely darker. Definitely darker with more like dissonance.
Yeah, man. So that's the Ixitzatchital though. I mean, like that's pretty much it. I mean, I'm in the book, Rage of Demons, right now. But, like I said, this monster could easily exist in just, like, as a creature in the ocean.
Yeah.
That doesn't worship Demogorgon.
Yeah.
But
evil manta ray, like, by all means.
Yeah. Just a bad manta.
Yeah.
bad something, manta. Something for you to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that they can do fresh or salt water. So that's scary.
Yeah.
If it could go fucking lakeside on you, mm-hmm. that would mm-hmm. be like a fucking camp nowhere.
Yes.
Like some like bad villain. Shit. Yeah. Some bad shit happening at summer camp.
Yeah. There's some like mythology of like a wish granting fish kind of thing. Like this would be like the polar opposite of that. Like it'd be like, hey, I'm here to say some bad shit to you about some bad things.
I like that. You could also really lean into the vampire stuff.
It's
like,
true.
This could be the template for an aquatic vampire, and the mm-hmm. oldest this the older this thing gets, like the more
dope
powerful, and like you kind of implement stuff from the vampire stat block, yeah, which is yeah. really cool. Obviously, throw out the shit about like killing it in water yeah. or whatever. You don't need that for this. It doesn't make sense.
The mouth shape and everything like that kind of reminded me of like the alpha vampires that were in like Blade 2. This is a weird cut. Weird reference. But their mouths like open up like that, like in three different ways. And they like had like a little like alien kind of tongue kind of situation. The second that I saw the art for the 4E one, I was like, oh, it looks like the vampire thing fits. Like, it looks like a fucking vampire.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's not draining through the barb. It's draining through the mouth. Yeah. So I picture when this thing goes to bite you, it's got its probes and, like, stabs you and bites
holds
you.
Holds you in.
Like, you get hurt, mm-hmm. like, mm-hmm. a lot mm-hmm. from it. And you should be fairly high level. I don't know what the level of the adventurers in this book are supposed to be, but it's got to be somewhat substantial based off of, like, the things they have to fight.
Yeah.
Just this alone, right?
And if this is a fifth level caster, they would have to at least be fifth level to deal with that kind of shit. Like, I mean, it has a low save and everything, but
can't
still
be below level 10 for this campaign. Yeah, no. This module, I don't think. I don't know if it like says at the beginning
like a recommended party level kind of thing.
I mean, it definitely says that in here. I just don't know what it is.
Yeah.
But what, like, if you were to run an Ixxatuan in your game,
mm-hmm.
what would you do with
my dino game?
Yeah, I guess like you can like you running a dinosaur game with friends at home,
yeah.
right? So like, yeah. what would you like if you were to put them in? Like, how would you kind of assert that?
Maybe I would, because I do have gods, but they're all like dinosaur based. So maybe I haven't really delved into like I have had extra planar stuff like elemental though, like not necessarily like demonic. So maybe I would lean into like a more natural kind of thing, like still maybe vampiric, because you know there are oceanic things that have that kind of tendency, like that feed off of other fish and stuff like that. So maybe I might flavor it to be a little bit more natural, or just come up with like a otherworldly like dinosaur god. Like, why the fuck not? Like,
yeah,
like there's like nice ones. Like, why can't there
the
be
worshiping thing, yeah, but just have it worship something else?
Exactly.
These could be followers.
Totally.
Yeah, I feel like for a lot of homebrew campaigns don't involve demons, particularly Demogorgon. Like, that's kind of the route you'd go with this monster.
Yeah.
If I'm doing a Demogorgon thing, and if you're going to the mall, you're definitely going to see these.
Yeah.
They're very, very cool creatures. I like them a lot.
They're interesting.
Horrifying.
Yes.
And I would definitely pepper in the spellcasty ones.
Yes.
Like, that's going to be a thing.
That seems sick.
And I was looking at the warlock patron stuff. Like, mm-hmm. no, I like the cleric-y thing for them a lot.
Yes.
Like, you could do warlock stuff with them, too. Like, why not? I mean, like, you have the templates there. Like, the Cult of Demogorgon probably does Great Old One.
Mm-hmm.
Or not great, abyssal, like, warlock-y stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you're gonna be doing that. I found the level recommendation for the beginning. It's, like, first level.
Oh, okay.
So you're going to work your way up, I'm pretty sure.
Mm-hmm.
It says you can start between, like, 1 and 3, depending on how easy you want to make it for mm-hmm. people. I'm sure it has to go, it has to scale fairly quickly.
Yeah.
Based off of, like, some of the things in this book. But there are low-level monsters in here, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know there's, like, hook whores and drow and, mm-hmm. like, all kinds of cool stuff in here. But that's pretty much the gist of it. Like,
yeah.
at the end, like, there's big things waiting for you.
Yeah. I mean, I tend to like to level my characters fast, just because I know how
the squishiness at the beginning.
Yeah, it's so squishy. Like, I like getting them into the 5 to 7 range a little bit quicker.
Meatier and heartier characters.
Yeah, yeah. Then they can kind of handle things, and I can turn up the heat. They can feel strong while also fighting these other strong things, and
I feel
a little bit
that's
better.
Encouraging for new players, especially.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't want to, like, unless you explicitly talk about it at the beginning, like, hey, look, you might die. Like, don't get too attached right away, because that can be really off-putting, I think, if your players' unexpectedly die and they put a lot of work into them,
yeah,
that can be very off-putting for new players.
Yeah.
So, like, have the conversation at least and be upfront if, yeah, like, death is going to be imminent for low-level characters, like, yeah, it is. Like, maybe start new players in that style with, like, some one-shotty stuff,
yeah,
less consequential.
Definitely.
For a long-form campaign, probably not a great idea to have new players just, like, dying left and right.
Yeah.
It's going to be hard for them to get settled and established and to, like, learn the game.
Yeah.
So maybe that's what the book is recommending. Like, let's start at level one. Like, it's an entry level.
Like, work into it.
Work up to it. And, like, I really don't know too much about this module,
yeah,
except for some of the key points, like how long you're supposed to run it. Like, modules is kind of like a weak point for me, and Will's discussed it as well. Like, it's difficult for us to run. We prefer, like, being to improv a little more and kind, yeah, of being left to our own devices in terms of story beats. And, like, not have to follow this. Because if you deviate too much at the beginning, like, you're going to have a hard time getting back on track, I feel like.
It's true.
And I did try to run a module with you and, yeah, our friend Steve for FBATS, like a show we do on Patreon again. But yeah, I had a really, really difficult time with it.
Yeah.
It was completely not my style, not the way I learned how to play the game. But it's still really great. Like, if you don't want to, like, prep so much stuff and, like, have to come up with, like, your own thing, and, like, here it is, like, stat blocks, monsters, story beats, it's all there, and there is room for improv and deviation in here.
Yeah,
it just takes some reading. I mean, just get into it, and
it's like a Curse of Strahd kind of thing. Like,
exactly.
maybe if you want to have, like, experienced players, like, play a game where they might not survive, or,
yeah,
you know, like, that kind of thing. Like, hey, let's test these boundaries real quick.
Yeah, like, Curse of Strahd, that's a pretty long campaign.
Yeah.
This seems like
a little
fair
shorter
length.
Yeah.
Like, a little shorter than that. Yeah, yeah. I think most people play Strahd for about a year.
Okay.
Maybe more, or maybe less, like, give or take.
Yeah.
But I think this one's more like a 6 month to a year.
Interesting.
Depending on what you do and how fast you run it.
Yeah.
That's just my feel. I'm not really sure. Mm. But yeah, man, that's everything I've got.
Do
you have,
yeah,
anything else?
No, it was a lot of fun.
All right.
Thank you for having me.
Let's take a long rest.
Let's do it.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the long rest. This is the part of the episode where we get ready to fucking sleep, baby.
I'm so tired.
I need more hit points.
Oof.
They've been drained.
Yes.
And
my
siphoned
spell slots.
To the Demon Lord, Prince Demogorgon.
Oh, yes.
Shout out to Demogorgon.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't get it.
Shout
even
out.
One in.
You did.
I was trying to be professional.
I did a little bit.
You did a little bit. You dabbled.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You dabbled.
Shout out to Demogorgon.
Yeah. Shout out to Demogorgon. Okay, so let's build a beholder.
Sure, yeah.
After I put on my Demogorgon slippies.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wait. Why are they all wet?
Oh, no.
Oh, geez.
Did I have Demogorgon slippies last time, or were they just
regular
slippies?
They were Brian and Will slippies,
they
and
were.
I ripped off the Will face
you
and
did.
Reattached
That's
a
right.
special guest face. Sorry, Will.
So I just have a bloody slippies.
Gross. That's
yeah,
not.
Yeah.
That's not. Are you suggesting that our slippies
like
are
your
made
actual
of flesh?
Face? No.
I feel like that is what you're
Maybe.
Suggesting.
That's fine. Let's move on.
Okay.
What are we doing?
okay, so we don't... I don't know what this beholder looks like anymore. We fucked
yes.
up and
yeah.
like forgot to add one. I think the last one that we built, Skynet, he got finished, but was missing a tentacle.
Yeah.
So the episode we did after that where I thought we were starting the new one was a Psy Warrior, where we gave him like a psychic beam of some kind. I forgot. Like a psychic eye. Like he had like psychic energy. I don't remember. You have to go listen to that episode. But that should probably be on Skynet.
Yeah.
Skynet with a capital E-Y-E in Skynet.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Capital E-Y-E,
yeah.
net,
yeah.
the Arachnopod, the sequel.
Yes.
I've
seen it. It's beautiful.
It is beautiful. Thank you, Hobbleman.
Yes.
Hobbleman, if you need one, take the one from the Psy Warrior episode and just like, you know, cake it on to Skynet. And then we'll start, I think, from the Grix episode with the Grix Ranch hat. And then next episode is the Eldritch Knight, which we've already recorded, which we made all the arms buff, all the tentacles buff.
Tentacles
like,
buff.
Like arms.
A six pack on the beholder.
A six pack.
And did it shoot?
It shoots a sword out of
it
its
did,
eye.
Yes. Yeah.
Which I think its eye is just holding, it's like wrapped
it was
around
holding
a sword.
It just
throws a sword.
And it just throws a sword, yes. Yeah. And it calls it back. Yes,
yeah.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So that's where we're at. So this beholder is a Grix Rancher. It's got a Grix Rancher whistle for one of its eyes. And it's wearing a cowboy hat, a very big one, like a 10-gallon Texas-style cowboy hat.
Dope.
And now it has think that's it, right? Okay, so now we need to add some demonic or Ixtatchital inspired demon stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So what do you think? We need a tentacle with a beam and then like an overall feature for the look of it.
I say I'm thinking like it may be a vampiric ray.
Okay.
For the beam or vampiric beam.
A vampiric beam.
Of some sort.
So drain some HP.
Yeah, yeah. And heal itself.
Okay.
Like, yeah. And then look-wise, maybe let it have that fucking, that shark face. Like the three opening face.
Oh, like you from know? Blade?
Yeah, yeah. From Blade. Yeah, yeah. That we were just talking about.
So there's that new D&D game that just came out.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
What was that called again? Dark
Dark Alliance.
Dark Alliance.
Yeah.
So Dark Alliance has a beholder.
It does.
That has that sort of mouth structure to it.
It does.
Let me look that up.
I think it's like Hagadorn or something like that.
Hagadorn.
Hagadorn. That's what it is. I haven't fought it yet, but
I typed in Daggerdorn.
I sure did fuck up a whole bunch of Gerblins.
That was the last thing I played.
Yes, I have. Yeah,
you were telling me that you did. Now I remember. You told me that you played it.
Yeah, me and Steve, who we play FBATS with, got to level 10 in that game and finished the first two levels, and it was a lot of fun. Fought a bunch of Durogar in the first level, and then the second one we picked was all gobbies.
So yeah, this thing has a like the jaw, the bottom half of its face, the mm-hmm. jaws kind of like in these sections. Mm. So yeah, like do we want to do that? Like the three party, like kind of like this creature?
I think that looks dope.
Except like instead, like if you're looking at Hagadorn for the inspiration, it's mm-hmm. a little bit off because it still has that like
the main one.
That a regular mouth. Just kind of has those pieces. So it needs three different like angles to its jaw.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So a triangle, essentially. Triangle,
definitely. Yeah,
with that's teeth what I'm on thinking. Each side on the inside.
Yes.
Does that make sense, Hobbleman? Hobbleman is in our Discord, which you can find in the links below.
Yeah.
There's a lot of great people there, like the Hobbleman.
He's got beautiful art.
He's got beautiful art of our beholders and lots of other stuff, like Super Quest Saga stuff.
Mm-hmm,
So, Jake, do you want to plug anything or talk about yourself at all? Or like say what's up? Or
I mean, I'm just really on Scoos, if I could plug that, or Super Quest Saga. That's always dope. It's always fun. We just did a very cool end of our dungeon episode, and that was, we did like a, what was it?
Yeah, we've
like
been dungeon crawling in this last arc.
For a while, in like a big ship.
The whole arc.
I wouldn't call it a lit ship, but it was a cool, space pirate dungeon, and it was awesome.
Yeah, really, really good. Will did a great job.
A lot of demon shit in that as well.
Demon and devil shit, yeah. Yeah, Will's. I feel like Will's more of a devil guy, and I'm more of a demons guy. Obviously, shout out to Demogorgon. but Will's always been like he, nine hells, Asmo. He's really into that stuff, and he did a lot of it. He's been doing a lot of devil shit. In space, which is very, very cool,
very sick.
So yeah, if you guys want to check that out, that's where you can find your special guest Jake and our friend of the show Josh Freeland, who are players along with myself, while Will is the DM.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, please check out Super Quest Saga. If you'd like to support us further, you can do so by going to patreon.com/dungeoncast, where you can catch early episodes of this show ad free. You can also catch like a ton of live play stuff that we've done for there. Eventually, we'll record Ranger Danger Part 3.
Oh, man.
We will complete Ranger Danger Part 2.
Yes. In
a third installment.
Yeah.
Or something like that. We have a fight left that we just have not been able to get around to.
It's been tough.
But there's like a ton of cool stuff to keep you occupied, like mm-hmm. FBATS, which Jake is also on.
I was going
to
plug that as well, because it's always fun. Batman-inspired D&D campaign that Brian runs does a very good job adapting those episodes.
Thanks. So we can you can get a lot of that stuff at $5 a month, like a ton of it.
Hell yeah.
And then as you scale, there's merch, like exclusive merch. I think including our like special Indeed mug at our $20 level, which will change out, I think, at the end of this year. We're going to have something new.
Ooh.
And we're working on new stuff all the time. We've been like not posting as much because we're so swamped this year for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a lot of life stuff happening. Will is having a baby.
Yeah.
So thanks for all your guys' special wishes. He has heard and seen and read them, and he's really grateful. He'll be back in a couple weeks. I don't know how many episodes we're going to release with Jake, but they'll all be on Patreon for you guys to listen to. But yeah, that's it. I think we can call it a game.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's call it a game.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
the Dungeon Cast.
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to season one, we are thrilled to announce the launch of season two. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you. And let's make season two even more memorable together.